Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Brian loves baseball, and Warren used to play baseball.
Well,
yeah, and now you coach, or you're coached too, right? For your son?
I was coaching. Yeah. I had to resign due to, you know, the diagnosis and symptoms and
yeah,
everything that comes with it. You know, got to reprioritize my focus.
Yep.
So now I'm just a dad in the stands.
Just a dad in the stands.
Welcome to The Secret Life of Parkinson's, a podcast created by people living with Parkinson's to help break the stigma of a disease no one likes to talk about. Now, here are your hosts, Jessica Krauser and Brian Baker. So, Warren Hanna is here with us from Florida, and your young onset, you were just diagnosed last year?
May of last year, okay. May 24.
Yeah. And he's already been, you know, digging into things, and he met with Erica because you're not too far away, right, from her, and trying to find PD.
Yeah, Erica's about 45 minutes to an hour away, and I met her through the Michael J. Fox Foundation.
Oh, like the Buddy Network?
Yeah, I went to the Buddy Network and immediately started reaching out to somebody to try to relate to somebody. Similar age, married, 2 kids, same for me. I think she's maybe a year older than me. And so I immediately reached out to her like, hey, I need somebody to calm me down a little bit.
So we haven't talked to a newbie in a while, I feel like.
Not in a while. No.
But that was 3 years ago. So we're celebrating our 3-year anniversary of the podcast. But so I'm going into my 6th year of having PD. Brian's going into his 10th. And so you're going into your first year, which I think we all pretty much remember. Talk us through like what your experience was like and what you are going through right now that is either frustrating or learning or what you need to know.
Yeah, you know, I think maybe I sound like a broken record because a lot of people talk about it. But, when you get diagnosed, you immediately go to, when am I going to die?
Mm-hmm. Why
or
do we do
how,
that?
How quick does that come? You know?
Uh-huh.
Your MDF tell you that it didn't have any, it should not have any impact on your life expectancy?
No, but I mean, they did for me too, but you still think like, I don't know.
I guess I was naive. I didn't.
I thought that, and then I thought, when was I going to be in a wheelchair?
I thought, you just give me a shot of penicillin, and it's going to take care of this, right?
Well, in the essence of time, and me and Jessica talked about this before, my first experience was not the best experience with an MDS. So, saw my primary care, saw a neurologist. He said he was the wrong guy. The referral was in the wrong place. That I needed to go see his colleague who was the MDS. Had a brain MRI, cervical spine MRI. Appointments kept getting pushed back. This sounds very common for a lot of people when I come across their stories. And when I finally got to see him, he didn't have a copy of my MRI. So he just said, I think you have some form of Parkinsonism, but I can't tell you because I haven't read your MRIs. Go do some LSVT training, come back and see me in 4 months. Good luck. And I'm like, I walked out and I told my wife, I said, I won't be back here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I seek and found the neurologist that I work with here in Pensacola. And she was great. She was thorough. And she just said, hey, you're a classic case, young onset, non-tremor dominant. And explained a lot of things very thoroughly. Erica had referred me and brought up the Norman Physical Institute in Gainesville. So I already had a referral down there, and I saw a doctor, an MDS down there as well. And he agreed. He said, yeah, I agree, you know, with the previous MDS, your young onset, non-tremor dominant, and kind of explained everything. So at that point, by that point in time, I was already about 4 months in to kind of reading about it, saying, I think this is what I got. Mm-hmm. And was wanting, I don't know, I guess wanting the MDSs to kind of affirm what you're reading off Google. You know, you can freak yourself out a little bit.
Yeah. How did you, like, how was your reaction and like your wife's initial reaction to it?
I think it's, you know, it's always tough for your spouse to hear that, you know, so she's tough, but she would still, you know, kind of break down a little bit. And for me, my mindset is, what do I have to do? What can I control?
Mm-hmm.
You know, give me the direction that I need, and I'll make sure that I do it. You know, if you got to drink water, hey, I'll drink water. So, you know, May 2024, I was diagnosed. I was already kind of doing some things in my life to change my life from a health standpoint and a wellness standpoint. But when I was coaching a year before my diagnosis, I weighed about 235, 240, lacked discipline. I was in the rat race of work and kids, at the ball game, travel tournaments every weekend, eating fast food, drinking Dr. Pepper, you know. So immediately when it happened, I cut alcohol out of my life, cut sugar out of my life, started trying to get onto, you know, Mediterranean or Mayan diet. I couldn't run, and I didn't have the stamina to really lift weights, but I started walking, doing stretching, things that I needed to do. And like today I weighed 193 this morning when I woke up.
Wow.
And, you know, for the most part, you like to think that you feel great, but like I told you, you want to stay humble because you feel like at any point in time, the disease can humble you and something else can come from left field that you know, you weren't ready for, or you didn't think about.
Yeah.
And I really try not to think about the negative sides of what could happen. Because there's nothing until that bridge comes, I don't need to cross it, is how I feel.
Yeah. Like the other thing I think people assume is that, like you said, like what's the next thing coming? And it doesn't progress overnight. Like you're going to notice it something, and then it's just like a slow, gradual, you know, progression of things. And then there's things that you can do to like try and help, not reverse it or fix it. But, you know, like when I had my shoulder and my elbow issues, like I went to see a physical therapist and I did that for like, I don't know, how long did I do that for? Like 6 months. But that was a huge help.
Do you find yourself compensating or overcompensating? For me, I would be like typing with my left hand instead of my right hand. And I didn't notice at the time. I saw myself starting to shave with my left hand, brush my teeth with my left hand, things that for no reason, my left side started taking over control.
No, I think that's a perfect way to put it, Brian. A lot of people do ask me, you know, like, hey, how did you know, or, you know, what symptoms were you having or what was going on? And you go back and play the hindsight game and say, oh, I remember when I figured out that manually brushing my teeth seemed a little bit different. Petting my dog was a little bit different. And then you come to find out that it's called, you know, I think it's a akinetic rigidity.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, you know, and I'm not trying to jinx myself, but I've never been sick, never been on medication, never been hospitalized, do my blood panels, my primary care every year. So at 42, 43 years old, when I was probably first starting to really notice symptoms, you know, you don't sit here and think, let me go to Dr. Google and go down a neurological rabbit hole.
Yeah.
You start playing these mind games with yourself and you start talking to yourself like, man, that's weird. Like, why can't I do that no more? Or,
yeah, I mean,
hey, why is that so difficult now?
Yeah, for me, one of the biggest things is my son played lacrosse, and I could not, we'd go out and play catch, and I couldn't release the ball, right?
Yeah.
I couldn't play catch with it anymore. I was like, what? What is this?
Oh, because it was catching.
It just, like, yeah. You're supposed to look, you know, fluent.
Yeah.
You know, you're releasing it, and I just couldn't release it, and...
Yeah, you know, mentally, that's the thing, because I think I talked to Jessica about this before, was for me, when I was a baseball coach, you know, I would throw batting practice. There was one day I remember coming home to my wife and I said, hey, you know, I can't throw batting practice no more. And she's like, what do you mean? I said, you know, I can't throw strikes. And I didn't have the release point. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the finesse that I used to have. In baseball, sometimes it's called the yips. So you're like, oh, maybe you got the yips, which is more of a psychological thing. So I just kind of disregarded and moved on. And then when this happens, you go back and you start, you know, playing these maybe symptoms or foreshadowing to mm-hmm. what was to come.
Yeah.
But you just didn't, you know, realize it at the time.
So how do your kids, how did they react to it, considering you were like very involved and are very involved from a sports standpoint?
Pretty good. You know, my son doesn't like talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, like, you know, you can see like my mouth. Sometimes my tremor will pull my mouth, though. She's not here to laugh about it, but she'll make me chuckle when it starts happening. But for the most part, I mean, you know, pretty strong for 13 and a 15-year-old.
Good. What was your first steps after meeting with the MDS that finally diagnosed you? Did you go right to medications? Are you holding off on medications? What are you doing?
So the question that I had for the MDS, and I've actually asked three different MDS this question, and they haven't been able to answer it. They always offered the medication. I'm not opposed to medication. I'm not one of those people. I think it's each their own, whatever helps you, whatever you think is best.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, like I told my MDS, I said, look, you know, I feel that I can do everything in my life. I may be slower. I may get frustrated, but I don't feel that I need medication at this point in time. Because I don't have resting tremors and the shaking, I think that makes it a little bit easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
The other part was I didn't feel like I was living my life and maximizing the holistic approach to wellness. So I wanted to lose weight, change my diet, drink water all the time,
mm-hmm.
try to get as healthy as I could, see how my body felt, see what kind of improvement or lack of improvement I had, and then maybe reconsider the conversation. In the meantime, I was, searching for clinical trials, and there are some that, you know, want you without medication.
Mm-hmm.
And here recently, I go to UAB February 16th, 17th, and 18th for my physical and cognitive assessment for the SPARX 3 clinical trial.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We did talk about that.
You know, so that is based around, you know, for the most part, I think it's running on a treadmill four days a week and moderate or high intensity heart rate. And it's over an 18-month period of time, but the study goes over a two-year period of time. So I'm looking forward to that. I haven't ran in a very long time. You know, like everybody, you try to run, your arms don't move, your legs, you know, your legs feel heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you try to figure out what works for you. But that's currently where I'm at. I don't take medication. I do take a lot of supplements and vitamins and mm-hmm. minerals.
Yeah.
But
so you can't take medication when you're on the SPARX 3 trial, like at all?
I believe when I read on it, they don't want you taking medication to start it.
Okay.
And I think you have to be in it within at least 3 to 6 months before they'll allow you to take it.
Okay.
But I just knew that, you know, hey, I'm not taking it, and I don't feel like I'm going to need to take it anytime soon. So mm-hmm. this is where I'm at.
Yeah. And I was the same way. I didn't take medication for like the first year and a half. But then I was so dystonia. My dystonia was so bad and the cramps were so bad. Once I started taking it, I was like, oh, this is what it's like to mm-hmm. release that.
Yeah.
Brian, you give me so much to look forward to.
No, but I was the same way. I was like, I'm not taking meds. Yeah, and it was a thing for me. Like, I didn't want to take meds. No, meds were a sign of weakness, I guess, to me.
Oh, I could care less. And I was like, what do I need to be on?
Well, we just had the same conversation. We literally had the same conversation 10 minutes ago about my DBS because I'm still not on any meds.
Yeah. And I know, and I've been dyskinetic. Sorry, so we had a DBS conversation right before this, and so he looked like me 3 years ago, sitting in this seat, moving around everywhere. And I was pretty still because I was only 2 years in. And now that he's had DBS and I'm slated to get DBS this year, I'm still like in that process, and I keep questioning things. And he's like, why do you keep questioning it? I'm like, I don't know, because like sometimes I think like maybe I am okay. And he's like, wait till you watch these videos again. I'm like, but it's not that bad.
Well, let me ask y'all something, because I don't know if I've ever asked this question to another person with Parkinson's. And let me backtrack real quick. The question I had to the MDS was, by taking medication, will it be able to increase my intensity for my exercise and my stamina? And by doing so, if it increases my stamina and if it can increase my intensity, and that is scientifically shown to really slow the progression, then it makes sense to me. But if taking medication doesn't necessarily help increase my stamina or my exercise intensity, then why would I take it? That's the question I asked them. The question that I want to ask you two is, did you feel that it did increase your stamina or your intensity from your activity level? And when you, when you're on and off your medication, do you feel that it's harder in the off period than it was prior to when you started taking medication? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. Do you want me to go first?
Go ahead.
So it's funny because I was actually just with Tony. We have a friend, Tony, who has young onset Parkinson's, who lives in Cleveland. And I was with him this week talking to medical students up at, in Cleveland. And he was actually telling me, he was like, it's weird. He's like, my exercise is so much better when it's like this time frame within my medication, within my meds. But if I take it like slightly different, he's like, I don't get as good of a like exercise performance wise. And I would say the same thing. I never thought about it like that, but to your point, like with you, how you feel like your legs are heavy. So my right side was the first side that was affected. And so I like felt like I had a drop foot, and it was like, I would run like with my kids, and like I would run on the track, and it just felt like, like cement blocks, like just, oh my God, I'm like dragging. And then, you know, I don't know if like, yeah, so I guess it would help the intensity, but like, I don't have that feeling anymore. Like I don't even have the dystonia in my feet and my foot and my leg anymore. And that's where it was like the worst. And I'd say during my off time, like right now, God, I'm not due for meds for a little bit. It's more like if I'm still good if I'm active. But I guess last week I was telling people at the gym, we were out late, which I don't stay out late. We were out late dancing at this band that was playing in our hometown, and it was like 11 o'clock at night. And so my last dose was at 6 o'clock. And so 11 o'clock, I mean, it was a pretty significant time frame for me not to have any carbidopa levodopa in. And we were dancing, and like literally all of a sudden, like my body just like slowed down, and I like almost came to a stop. And I'm like, oh, like I need more carbidopa levodopa to make my body keep going. So I definitely think it helps with exercise for your body to be able to move in that way, versus not.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes sense. Obviously if your muscles aren't as tight and mm-hmm. you need a better stretch, for me, more than the cardio workouts, it's more important for me to make sure I'm making those big movements
mm-hmm.
and stretching my arms out, stretching my back out. You know, lately I've had a lot of dystonia in my upper back and neck, and I talked to people the other day. I'm like, I know exactly what this is. If you see people that have Parkinson's for a long period of time, whatever, they start to hunch over
mm-hmm.
because it starts to feel better, and through the muscles are contracting. You know, where I'm fighting that by, you know, making sure I'm standing up straight.
Yeah, I think the carbidopa levodopa, at least for me, it makes my body able to do the other things. Like to get DBS testing, you have to go off your meds for 24 hours so that they do an assessment off meds versus on. And it's like when I was off, I was, it took me a little bit, but I was like, oh my God, I forgot what it felt like. And I didn't get every feeling back because like I said, mine always originated in my like foot and my calf. But I felt enough back that I was like, please, is it time yet? Like, can I take my medication? But it's not, it's one of those things that it's like, if you take it and you don't notice that much of a difference, or you don't like being on it or the effects of it, then you just get back off.
Well, that, yeah. And when you're early on, you know, like yourself and stuff like that, you don't notice as many. Like, I didn't have what they call off periods.
Yeah,
I didn't have
you won't
off
know
periods
that.
Until I was like 5 years in. And people kept talking about off periods. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, but when they hit, you know, because that's like when you're like, Jess, you're like, oh, I got another hour before I take my next dose. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, you know, and I did meet another young onset male, and I think he's 46, two kids, married, very similar. He's in a opposite direction that Erica lives, and we met, had lunch, and I want to say he's been diagnosed for 8 to 10 years, mm-hmm. and he just started taking medication. And he did tell me, he said, you know, I really wish I would have taken it sooner, and here's why. His analogy was he felt like he was pie with spinach.
Yeah.
And when he would take it, his body would be, he could immediately feel it. And he wishes that he wouldn't have waited so long. I think when he was first diagnosed, there was maybe still that myth, you know, around dyskinesia and building, you know, your body building an immunity to it, yeah. things like that. So I don't disregard the medication, and I'm fully aware that one day I'll have to take some form of it. I just didn't want to rush into it because, I mean, I saw 5 different neurologists from different reasons of having to see them. And 4 of them were MDSs, and all 4 of them recommended, hey, do you want to take medication? And we had a conversation about it. What none of them did, and I'm not knocking them, because obviously I still see 2 of them. One of them is part of the clinical trial, so that's the 3rd one. But I didn't hear anything around exercise regimen, or I think there's a book that I saw that I came across that's talking about the exercise cocktail, about, you know, what, how you should you prioritize your exercise mm-hmm. and your therapy. And what, that's what I've been most frustrated about in the first year, is trying to find a program that works for me, because we're all different,
mm-hmm.
and really trying to, I started drinking from a fire hose. Hey, let me do this. Let me do this. Let me do this. Let me do that. And then I was like, you know, once I'm getting closer to my year anniversary, I'm like, okay, hey, I have a pretty good idea. I feel better. I know what's working, what's not working. And I need to draw this out, but I need to prioritize what's most important based on around the scientific research.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, you know, where I'm at currently.
So I love that you're participating in the research, because I really think that that's important. It's something I wish I, you know, would have looked into. I was too ready, I guess, excited just to like get something going to, you know, working. That would work for me. But that is frustrating. And that is something like with the nonprofit that we started, is what we're trying to change, is that that should be the first thing that every MDS, that every neurologist, that every primary care physician should be talking about, is the benefits of Parkinson's specific exercises. So like a PD Next Steps program, like Rocksteady Boxing, like, I mean, there's plenty of, you know, others out there, but it's like making sure that you're prioritizing that and the reason why. And then also talking about, you know, I know that they, you know, the medicine is our choice. And I get it, but I don't, because they like making it your choice almost makes it sound like there's a fear in it. Like, you know, why wouldn't I take that right now? And it's like, it's almost like, can you go through like a test trial period of like, do you feel better with this or not? You know, because sometimes when you're so early on, like Brian was saying, you're not going to notice those on off times because, you haven't progressed far enough. But it would still give you some benefit, and yeah, you're not going to become immune to it. We just progress faster than the strength is able to cover. So it's just like those myths and those things that aren't talked about is like so frustrating. But that's why they need people like us as the advocates to start pushing for that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you know, your podcast was one of the first podcasts that I came across. I think you and Brian have always done a great job making it a conversation and making it normal.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone that's newly diagnosed, it was really helpful because it felt very transparent and very honest. And, you know, you got to do the research and you got to listen mm-hmm. to podcasts, but you have to try to find what you're looking for and not just what you want to hear sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we always want to hear what's the next best
yeah.
thing.
I mean, not how are we repackaging. What we don't hear is how we're going to repackage CL.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that's all that happens.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's just put another dosage or package together or whatnot.
Yeah, that's something, you know, whether it's friends or family or people around, you know, they always ask. And for me right now, I really prioritize, you know, sleep, diet, trying to keep stress as low as possible in my life, exercise and meditation. Mm-hmm. And I've told people, I said, you know, those things I like to think that I can control to the, mm-hmm. those are the easiest aspects that I think I can control out of what's going on. And my job is to be able to control the controllables and navigate and cross the bridges when they come and kind of, you know, educate and inform myself to the best of my ability and, you know, how to make that decision when the bridge comes up.
Yeah. So do you think playing baseball, like in the training that you had to go through, do you think that plays any part in how you're reacting and handling the diagnosis?
Well, I think, you know, sports, a lot of people don't realize the mental side of sports, especially in baseball, but you have to do a lot of self-reflecting. You know, you have to do a lot of self-reflecting and you have to be honest with yourself. And so I think the sports side of it, it's whether you were, a good athlete, a good player, a bad player, it's more, you know, how do you dig into your mental mind frame and how do you try to, you know, overcome some, you know, some weaknesses or challenges or some failures.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what this disease is like. You know, you wake up in the morning and one day you may feel better than the next day, but people don't realize, you know, when you have to mentally, you know, you try to mentally not think about it, but it's practically impossible. You always come back to the fact that, hey, this is what I have, or, you know, is my back going to feel like this forever, or is my back going to get better, or, you know, just whatever the questions you may have. So I think the mental part of sports has helped overcoming the mental challenges and the mental frustrations that you have with this disease mm-hmm. on a daily basis. And being so new, you know, this may be a year that I've been diagnosed, and I know that I had symptoms for at least 2 years, maybe 3 years prior to being diagnosed, but you know, you don't feel like you're dying. You know, you don't feel like you're still living your life. Like you said earlier, it's mm-hmm. so gradual and it's so subtle that you don't realize who you've become mm-hmm. until you've already lost who you were.
It goes a little bit into what we were talking about, I think, last time about incorporating Parkinson's into your life
mm-hmm.
versus trying to continue your...
Instead of fighting it
and trying to live your life the way you used to, incorporating mm-hmm. it into your life.
It's like, you know, when you have kids and your friends that didn't have kids yet are like, why can't you go out and hang out and party and drink? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, now that I have this human being, I have to adjust my life.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Well, I think Michael J. Fox is the one who said, you know, acceptance is not resignation.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, Brian, that's kind of, you know, I agree. You have to accept the challenges that you have, the things that you can do, and try to maximize how your body works today.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for example, when I was coaching at the high school level outside of my job, 2023, I remember clearly, you know, before all this got diagnosed, I mean, my lower back was debilitating and probably 7 or 8 on a mm-hmm. scale of 1 to 10. And my wife, you know, mentioned, hey, you need to go see a doctor. There's something wrong. You know, you're not acknowledging it. And I said, well, I agree. Come to my doctor's appointment and let's start down that path. But I said, before then, I want to go to my chiropractor. I'm going to work out with a personal trainer
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to work with a physical therapist and try to maximize my body the best that I can.
Yeah.
And during that time period, it was probably 4 to 6 months. And my back went from an 8 to about a 3. So by this time, I was getting closer to being diagnosed, and I kind of was aware, like, okay, hey, if you're resting, you're rusting, right? Mm-hmm. That's what everybody says. And my lower back, you know, it hurt so bad that I thought from being in sports, it was, okay, hey, I must have injured it. I don't know how I did because I don't recall it. But let me rest. And let me recover and let me rehab and then I can start working back out. So I thought the more that I would rest, the better my back would feel,
mm.
which was obviously not the case. It got worse and worse and worse. So when we started working to, you know, with the physical therapist and chiropractor and all that kind of stuff, and it started feeling better, well, I was already reading the symptoms of Parkinson's, and it kind of just reinforced, like, wow, you know, the more that I exercise, the more that I'm moving, the more that I'm active, the better I feel. Mm-hmm. It kind of aligns with the PD diagnosis. And as y'all know, when you go down that neurological rabbit hole on Dr. Google, you will really scare yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're at the end of it, you're almost praying for PD.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the alternatives are really worse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I think that's where the relief comes in once you get diagnosed. That you say, okay, hey, I got a fighting chance. And there's a lot of good things going on at this moment in time and in the future.
Yeah.
And let me control what I can control.
So you talked about doing some advocacy or something down in Florida where you are, because you said there's not that many resources down there. Is that right?
Well, I think like any place, I mean, Pensacola, Florida, you know, is kind of our metropolitan areas where I grew up at. I live on the outskirts now in Gulf Breeze, but we have a lot of resources here, but it's more about, How do you connect everybody? Mm-hmm. And it's really hard and difficult to find other young onset PD people in my area.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're a very strong military community, a lot of military bases, you know, in all directions. So, you know, the Parkinson's community is very large when you're 60 and older.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're young onset, I've yet to come across anybody that, I mean, Erica's 45 minutes to an hour away. The gentleman that I met with, he's 20 to 30 minutes away from me.
Yeah.
I came out public because I really wanted to embrace the community. And I really wanted to bring the transparency and the awareness.
Yeah.
Because at the same token, you know, you don't want people, I didn't want people trying to control my narrative. I wanted to control my own narrative.
Yeah.
So to the point of your advocacy, it's more about trying to find, hey, you know, where are the resources at? I mean, we know there's, you know, PT and OT. We know there's neurologists. We know mm-hmm. there's all these professional people you go through insurance with. But how do we connect the community to, you know, bring awareness, but also support one another.
Yeah.
And there are some groups that do that. I'm aware of them. But
to your point, it's different when you can get somebody who is your age and your stage of life with working, having two teenagers, you know, still like in the throes of life, you know, that it's not a difficult time in anybody's life to begin with and layer on, you know, Parkinson's. So I'm sure that there are more people that are close by to you. It's just, you know, everyone's kind of afraid to come out of that closet of saying that they have Parkinson's, or even just like, I guess, the fact of getting diagnosed. So keep doing what you're doing and putting the word out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we talked about before, you know, my father had epilepsy for over 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of wild because he was a major league baseball player, and I learned a lot of baseball from him. And, you know, I told my wife, I said, it's really ironic that I learned how he handled his neurological condition
mm-hmm.
and how it's helping me in my own path, in my own journey.
That's great.
And, you know, it's ironic, but he was quiet. He didn't want to go public.
Mm-hmm.
Him and my mother were very private with his health, and to each their own, right? I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people are private.
Yeah.
But I didn't like it. You know, there's some things that I knew that I heard and that people would talk about. And you think people keep up with you. You think people are aware. They're really not.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted people to realize, like, hey, if I'm stumbling or I'm off balance, it's not because I'm drunk or on pills or,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I don't drink, I don't do drugs, I don't, you know, but
right.
people are also scared to ask you, like, hey, man, your balance is off. Or, mm-hmm. why are you stumbling, or why are you walking that way?
Because mm-hmm.
they don't want to be rude, and I get it, mm-hmm. but your close friends will.
Yeah, letting them know you're an open book is good. You okay?
Yep.
Okay. Well, Warren, we really appreciate you joining us and sharing your story. Like I said, it's been a while since we've had somebody who's pretty new to being diagnosed. So it's great to hear your perspective and what you're doing of, you know, not just not going on, you know, meds just yet, but then utilizing that from a research standpoint, because there are a lot of research that is out there that they don't want you to start out on meds. So thank you for all that you're doing there. Excited to hear how that trial goes. So we'll have to keep in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me on, and I look forward to listening to more episodes that y'all provide.
Thank you. So in our last 30 seconds, I'll leave you with this. As Warren said, no matter if you're young onset, if you're just diagnosed, or if you've been diagnosed for over 10 years, doing things that are in your control is the best thing possible. Whether that's your diet, exercise, meditation, just do what's best for you, but make sure that you're taking that time for yourself. And I don't know. That's it. Thanks, and we'll see you again next time. The Secret Life of Parkinson's is produced by Melissa Carlson and Steve Brandenburg. To contact us, email info@thesecretlifeofpd.org. The Secret Life of Parkinson's is not responsible or liable for any medical advice, diagnosis, course of treatment, or any other information obtained through this podcast. The information provided by The Secret Life of Parkinson's is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you heard on this podcast. You are encouraged to consult a physician for a definitive diagnosis.